You're listening to Bedroom Beethovens, where notable music makers break down stories accompanied by songs and melodies documenting growth through their 10,000-hour journey. And me? Well, my name is Cello, your host.
I am a bedroom Beethoven.
Hey everybody, episode 88 of the podcast is here with another bright artist mine who wished to move to New York to wait tables and be a musician, and look at her now. My guest this week is...
My name is Charlene Kay. I go by Kay, my last name. I'm a musician, guitar player, singer-songwriter. I was the lead singer of a band called San Fermin for the last 5 years. I've collaborated with a number of people in the New York music scene, which I'm sure we'll dive into, but yeah, that's the basics for now. I used to put things off for another day, but now it's nobody's way but my own way. Now I won't do anything unless I'm feeling it. I pulled the trigger, now you know who you're dealing with. I gave you all my love and nearly lost my crown. So people won't get their toes wet watching you drown. Put me down, put me down, and now I'm hustling. Give me a minute, I can show you how to muscle this.
What a time to be alive. It isn't just a mixtape by Drake. It is also a standalone single from Kay. The song is an electro-punk shock to the system that offers tongue-in-cheek, yet unflinching commentary on police brutality and racism in America, and we chat about the new normal of living in a global pandemic. New York, adventures at University of Michigan, and learning and honing her craft through her 10,000-hour journey. That's what this is about. And if you had to ask, yeah, she did co-produce the latest single, so add that to her resume as well. If you find yourself here on this episode, on this podcast, I thank you. Please check out the website bedroombeethovens.com for all archives, info, episodes, and access to the Patreon, which is the quickest, easiest method to show your support. I mean, if you like the podcast, why not help a creative out during these times? You can give as little as a buck or two and gain access to early episodes. I'll hook you up. Feel free to follow along on social media as well, and you have my undying thanks. Hope everyone's staying safe out there. If slang guitar melodies with a bit of funk is your jam, you're in the right place. Happy belated birthday.
Thank you so much.
How was the quarantine birthday?
It was great. I had the best birthday that I've had in a while. I went for a bike ride all around New York. Having a bike during COVID has really opened up my world, especially in New York City, because I have so much mobility to go anywhere, explore these places that I never would have previously. So I rode down the Brooklyn Bridge, and then I went all the way up through Williamsburg, Greenpoint, Long Island City, and then I found myself on Roosevelt Island. Have you ever been there? I don't know where you're based. Where are you based?
So I couldn't be further from New York. I'm in Texas, where everything is spread out. Yeah, there's no bridges. There's just plains.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a different type of beauty, which is awesome. I love Texas. But yeah, like I found myself on this random island. It's like in between Manhattan and Queens, and I guess it used to be like the home of an insane asylum when I was looking it up. And the whole place just has a very spooky vibe, and you can just feel that like some shit went down there. And so
you're just finding yourself at these places, or are you kind of mapping out routes and like, all right, you know, I've never been over here. Let me see what's over here.
A little bit of both. I knew that I wanted to visit Roosevelt Island because I'd never been there, and it was so close. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to go and see what it's like. But every time it's a bit of an adventure, and I'm enjoying that about, while we're still able to be outside while it's warm.
Yeah, I know you had a few COVID scares in your family, so I hope everyone's safe.
Yeah, we're all okay. My roommates, they had it at the same time, and then I had it when we were quarantining in Ohio, where one of my roommates is from. And it was really mild. Like, I just lost my sense of taste and smell, and I was sick for a couple of days. So I'm lucky that I was able to bounce back. But yeah, I have antibodies now. I don't know how long it lasts. I just keep getting tested, and they're still there. So I'm just going to, I don't know. I'm just taking advantage of my temporary immunity.
Well, I've been looking forward to this interview because I'm actually married. I'm married to a Korean woman, an Asian woman. I'm very familiar with how Asian moms view their kids. Like, if you don't,
oh man,
yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm, let me get into it for my audience that may not be familiar. But it's kind of like if you don't lie within their expectations of what they want to be. Yeah, I don't care if you went to NASA and landed on Mars. If you're not like a doctor, or you grow up to be at least close to what their idea of what you should be is. Yeah, so she's been kind of stuck in this vortex her whole life of like pleasing her mom and living her life. And, you know, do you struggle with that even now? Like, you're an accomplished musician for over a decade. Do you still struggle with that?
Every day. Yeah, 100%. And I'm glad that you have that window into this culture and this world, is because it's palpable how much I think about that, and it like manifests in my own approach towards making music. And it's true that that she was never really supportive of my becoming a musician growing up, and it was preferable for me to become a doctor or a lawyer. And you know, over the years I really tried to imagine what it would be like to have a different career path, and I just kept on bouncing back to music. And that's kind of how you gravitate towards something without really consciously thinking about it. And you know, my community here is so supportive. Most of my friends here are musicians as well. And it's just, I think it's just something that I was born with. But yeah, I think even now, it's difficult to explain what I do. Like, I don't really let her know when I release something, because it's too vast of a cultural gap. Like, I swear in some of my songs, and she hates that. And she's conservative, and I'm liberal, and she hates that. And it's like there's definitely like a chasm between us that's been difficult to navigate over the years, and it's painful for sure. But
your mom listened to Soul Records, and she owned a guitar, so maybe it was okay to have music interests and hobbies, but don't dare pursue it as a career. Maybe
exactly. Yeah, you can. I mean, now that I look back, I realize that it is a pattern of Asian parents to put their kids in various extracurricular activities so that it will look good on a college application.
Yeah, we put our youngest daughter in violin lessons probably because of that a little bit. We're guilty.
Yeah, but I mean, like, and when I fell in love with it, I was kind of like, it's your fault. Like, you're the one that gave me these amazing gifts and tools, and like, I happen to love it. So now you've created a monster.
Yeah, I mean, to go from classical piano to, you know, being a teenager playing Nirvana songs on a guitar in your room. Oh, you know, we didn't see that coming. So okay. It must have been a very back and forth process as well, proceeding to find an identity in your formal years and who you want it to be.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really real. And the Asian musicians I know, we all talk about it, and it's a source of shared angst growing up. But, you know, it makes us more, I would like to think that it makes us more complex people, and gives us more to write about. I've written a lot of songs about it.
Yeah, there's a lot of Asian people in rap, but in rock, there's not so much. There was a group that formed in New York called Cat Mothers and the All Night Newsboys. Have you heard of them?
No, but that's an amazing name.
Yeah, so I think the guitarist in there was a guy named Charlie Chin, and Rolling Stone magazine said that he was the only Asian person in rock at the time, the only one.
Oh my gosh. Wow. When I was just a little boy, you know, my one and only joy was listening to that good old rock and roll. I just turned 23, and if you want to get a message to me, all you gotta do is play with that good old rock and roll.
Yeah, and then the big Asian artists that we have today, like Nicole Scherzinger, Bruno Mars, Neo, they're all mixed, and they don't traditionally look Asian, so you can't really find representation in them, you know, unless you're a big Tia Carrera fan, which, you know, yeah.
Which I am, absolutely. She's a badass. For a second, I loved your career, but I thought you said Tila Tequila. Like, she's another Asian out there.
Well, the thing about Tia Carrera is, like, you were born in Hawaii, and she had a whole damn album dedicated to Hawaii.
Wow. Yeah. Like, and the thing about her is that you're so 100% right that there was no representation for Asian musicians. And I saw her in Wayne's World, and I was just like, this bitch is fire. Like, look at her, look at her thigh high boots and her bass playing. And like, she wasn't really playing, whatever. But the fact that there was that visual, I was like, wow, like this is really powerful. And she like has agency. She has like a character arc, and she's not just like a tokenized, you know, like bowing Asian person. But still, like, there have been times when I perform and I'll be playing a show or something, I have a white guitar, and someone will come up to me and be like, oh my god, you're like Cassandra from Wayne's World, which is a huge compliment, but also it speaks to the lack of representation, because she's not real. Cassandra's not a real person. She's a fictional character in a movie, and if you look at the actual music industry, they're just so few and far between. And I do think it's getting better. We have people like Mitski and Japanese Breakfast and Rina Sawayama and Biba Dubi, that artist on the 1975 Guys label. And I'm seeing more and more people that look like me cropping up and like holding space in like the indie rock realm. And I think it's better than it ever has been, especially with Hollywood too. And I think that it's no coincidence that we're starting to see more Asian representation after the release of Crazy Rich Asians, which I think was a huge cultural moment for Asian Americans. And it showcased a bunch of Asian actors who've been hustling for a long time, doing this for 20 years. And finally, there's something that breaks into the mainstream. And it's not like the best movie in the whole world, but, you know, white people get like 1,000 romantic, like mediocre romantic comedies. So like, we can get one, you know, I'll take it.
It probably didn't help growing up in a place like Ann Arbor. You know, I might be off base here, but it even sounds like a predominantly white area.
Yeah, it definitely was. And they have a really strong folk community. They have like that big folk festival every summer or every year. And I got my start going to open mics and playing at house parties and stuff. And I do miss that about Ann Arbor. There was such a strong indie music and electronic underground scene. And you could go into someone's house on any random night of the week and just see a cool like electronic band in the basement. And there might be like 7-8 people there or something, but people just love it. They just want to play and they just want their stuff to be heard. And the stage setup might be, you know, like one amp and one speaker, but I love that DIY aspect of the scene there. And I still take that scrappy, like kind of make it yourself, even if it's kind of crappy at first, mindset with me throughout my current creative process.
And what led you to University of Michigan?
It was so random, actually. I didn't think too much about where I wanted to go to college. But I'm from Singapore. My mom and my birth dad are both from there. And my cousin went to University of Michigan, and he started an a cappella group called like Nothing But Treble or something like that. And he loved it. And he was a foreign exchange student there, but he had a great experience. And so he told me about it, and I basically applied because of him. And it was, I never had set foot in the state of Michigan before our orientation. And so I took a huge leap of faith, but it ended up working out so well. Like I was going there with the intention of potentially transferring after if I didn't like it, but the energy and the school pride was so infectious, and I found my people almost immediately. And those are the people that I still consider some of my closest friends. So I was really lucky.
Yeah, we're talking a hotbed of talent. You had Theo Katzman and Wolfpack come out of there.
Mm-hmm.
You had Derek Barber, who was a jazz studies major at UM, and perhaps he is still releasing music this year. So who would have thought?
Oh man, do you know Derek, or have you heard of Perhapsy?
I have. Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My god, that's so cool. That's so awesome that you know of them, because I think that Derek is one of the most talented people I've ever met, and that was some of my favorite music. It was really awesome to be a part of a band that was that experimental and different. It's so cool that you know them. Nobody knows them.
Did you know Michelle Shamuel as well?
Yeah, of course. Wow, you did your homework, or you already knew about this somehow, but I'm so impressed.
I have to be ready for you when you come on the air, of course. I know about Joe Dart, I know about Buddy Paul, I know about all those guys.
You know, Buddy Paul, that is the deepest deep cut I never would have expected you to know.
It's the Bedroom Beethoven Podcast.
Does your love of anime know no bounds? Is your truest form in front of a screen bewildered and excited as muscle-bound high schoolers shoot lasers and magical girls fly on angel wings? Then you must be brimming with that unbeatable anime protagonist energy, and the only place that you can let it all out is Funimation. Thanks to their massive library filled with hundreds of subs and dubs, when a series finale leaves you heartbroken, you can start the process all over with a new show. You know, back in the day, anime fans eagerly longed for the latest episodes while Japan was already full seasons ahead. That sucked. But those days are long gone, because Funimation has episodes available to stream the same day they air in Japan and dubbed within 2 weeks. With a Funimation subscription, you also gain access to members-only content and shop exclusives, meaning you can finally reach the peak of your fandom power. Watch now on Funimation.com and get 2 weeks for free. And with over 13,000 hours of anime, the binge never has to end. That's Funimation.com. So, yeah, so that was obviously like very advantageous for your career. But, you know, I'm wondering here because, you know, I'm very familiar with Parsons.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Did you get tired of asking like your sister to maybe help you with art and design, so naturally you go to the best design school in the country?
So it's less glamorous than a rock star story would entail, but I have a day job. I like do graphic design in addition to music, and I'm still doing it now during COVID while there's no touring, because that's going to be like one of the last things that come back. But I genuinely love it. I do my own artwork, and I've directed some of my music videos this year for the first time. But I do some like branding. It sounds like really corporate and techy, but there are companies that are owned by friends of mine, or like word of mouth, who might need logos or like branding identities. And so my friend JG and I, who I met at Parsons, we have like a small little independent design agency with just the two of us, and we've been taking on projects. And in addition to that, I do album artwork, merch, posters, and stuff for other musicians in the New York scene. So that I find really gratifying, because it's all for people I know. It's a labor of love, and it's something that I think I have a really good handle on, like creating something visual that accompanies their music.
I saw you designed a poster for Lizzo, who was the opening act in early 2008, which is funny because everyone knows who she is now, but maybe at the time when you did that poster, nobody did.
Yeah, that was when she was opening for Haim, and she had not blown up yet. I mean, so we played a few festivals with Lizzo, with San Fermin, and every time she was like on a small-ish stage, and she just brought it, and she was with her three dancers, and one of the dancers was like doing push-ups on the front of the stage, and Lizzo had a bucket with a bunch of cookies, and she was just throwing cookies out into the audience, and we were all dancing, and a lot of these festivals are like very white male centric, and they're just like shoegazy indie rock. And she was just this like big black girl, like twerking and like bringing so much heat. And it was captivating. So I'm a fan for life, and I'm lucky that I was able to see those shows before she started selling out, like, you know, Radio City Music Hall.
Oh, so mainstream Lizzo and underground Lizzo, no difference. Like she was who she was.
Yeah. I don't think she watered down anything. She's always been that brassy and feminist and just like unapologetic, energetic.
That's awesome. Amazing. Yeah, my wife is sad that she's starting to lose weight, because she feels like when a big singer loses weight, then their music ceases to be, like, she's a huge Adele fan. She's like, ah, her next album's not going to be good. I guarantee it. So she has this superstitious thing. Like, Lizzo's now a vegetarian now, and she's probably going to be super skinny, and she thinks the music's going to go along with it. So let's hope that's not true.
Damn, I didn't know that. I have been following the Adele stuff. That's really crazy.
So without throwing shade, though, whose Zanga page was better, you or Leanne's?
Mine, 100%. I got in trouble for that because I used to, like, put pictures of all of the celebrity crushes that I had, and my mom would be like, why are you posting pictures of the front man of the Hives? And, like, it was – I remember specifically getting in trouble because I had posted, like – I'm in love with this guy, and like I want to have his babies or something. And she was just like, "You want to have his babies?" And it's like huge, like it was like a huge thing.
Well, it's funny because like so I'm a graphic designer by trade as well, and I think and I think we're the same age. So I think a lot of people our age in this trade got their start exactly the same way we did, by like customizing MySpace and Zanga pages. And I think there's
yes, turning the mouse into a little unicorn.
Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, my wife, who wasn't my wife then, was like, oh, you got to create me a MySpace page. And I blew her off. I was like, I'm not doing that. So it's like a funny story that we have. But yeah, absolutely. That's how a lot of us got our start.
That's hilarious. I definitely redid the MySpace pages of my little seventh and eighth grade friends.
So music, branding, art, visual. But you major in English. That seems to be an anomaly when you start to examine everything mm-hmm. else.
Yeah. Originally, I wanted to be an English teacher. I had a really inspiring English teacher in high school. And I just loved reading and I loved storytelling. And I think that certainly has served me and has been a through line, like an invisible through line, I suppose, throughout my musical and visual creative work. Because it's writing, it's communicating, it's character study, it's using words and, you know, thinking about motifs and structure and stuff like that. And so the lessons of being an English major have been so invaluable, and I still read all the time. I still like think about the teachers that I had that taught me to think critically and to be curious and inquisitive. And
that has to be the reason why you craft modern musical versions of songs like Mad Tom of Bedlam, because you're an English major. So you probably got exposed to stuff like that, and then you're also a musician, and you just merge the two together.
Yeah, I'm drawn to what makes something last, and that's a classic storytelling. That's like an old bard's folk song.
To see Mad Tom of Bedlam, 10,000 miles I've traveled, Mad Maudlin goes on dirty toes, save her shoes from gravel. It's well that we sing Bonnie Boys, Bonnie Mad Boys, Bedlam Boys are Bonnie, for they all go bare and they live in the air and they want no drink nor money.
I enjoyed the repetition of it and the weirdness of the language, and I found myself wondering what it would sound like with modern rock production.
I went down to Satan's kitchen for to break my fast one morning, and there I got souls popping hot all on the spits a turning. Well, now we sing Bonnie Boys, Bonnie Mad Boys, Bedlam Boys are Bonnie, for they all go bare and they live in the air and they want no drink nor money.
And so I was playing around with it on my loop pedal one day, and then we decided to do a full out produced version with a music video and everything. And I didn't expect it to happen at the time, but that's what happens when you follow one little seed.
Your spirits white as lightning did on that journey guide me. The sun did shake and the pale moon quake whenever they did spy me. Well, that we sing Bonnie Boys, Bonnie Mad Boys, Bedlam Boys are Bonnie, for they all go bare and they live in the air and they want no drink nor money.
I love it. I didn't know anything about the song, so I dug a little deeper. And when you consider the background of the song, during the 18th century, it was a popular diversion to visit the hospital to watch antics of poor inmates. Admission was one penny, and it was said that the hospital realized an income of £400 a year from visitors. So Tom of Bedlam is one of the earliest songs about madness. And you made a modern rock song out of it with a 25-second electric guitar solo. I think that's amazing.
Wow. Thanks for that history. Wow, I just got schooled.
The last person that I know went to UM, now Darren Criss, I hope people don't crucify me for this, but I didn't know who he was. I don't watch Glee, but I went to his Instagram, and he's got pictures with Obama, Steve Aoki. I mean, every pic gets 350,000 likes. I had no idea. So when you guys collabed and he was a student at University of Michigan, I'm going to assume those were humbler times.
Yeah, I met him when he was at the first open mic I ever did, and he was playing I'll Make a Man Out of You, that song from Mulan. And it was so nerdy and amazing. And I was like, this dude has figured out the acoustic guitar chords to this Disney song. Let's be friends. So I walked up to him afterwards and I was like, yo, I'm a huge Disney fan too. We should jam sometime. Cause that was what you said back then. Like, let's jam. And so we jammed and just discovered we had a lot of specific esoteric musicians that we loved and started playing shows around town and did a couple songs together. And yeah, and now he's like an A-list celebrity, which is crazy.
And his wife is the reason for Guns N' Hoses.
She's the reason that I'm in Guns N' Hoses. Yeah, she and our Axl Hose were the two that initially started the band. And it started as a party joke. It was just like, what if we did this? This would be so funny. And Aaron, who plays Axl, is genuinely a huge Guns N' Roses fan and like learned how to drive while blasting them in the car. And she like ran into Axl and Slash in the elevator one time when she was younger. And yeah, so Mia roped me into it and she was like, do you want to be Slash? And I was like, I can't play guitar like that. And she was like, okay, well, maybe you can play rhythm guitar. We'll find someone else to be Slash. I was like, okay. And so I started learning the songs. And that was in 2011. Oh my God, I'm so old. When Hurricane Irene had hit the city and I had found myself in my apartment, we weren't allowed to go outside because it was flooding. And I just sat in there and like decided to try my hand at learning the Welcome to the Jungle solo. And I had like the complete wrong guitar for it. But holed up in my apartment, I just started learning some of the solos and found it was really fun. And it was a real like intellectual and physical challenge to get my fingers to do that. And I'm not formally trained in guitar. Like I have classical piano training, but I think that background enabled me to think about the solos in a classical way. And it's all like memorization and remembering the position of my fingers on the fretboard and repetition. And Guns N' Roses is very classical in the way that they compose their compositions. And Sweet Child of Mine was like a Bach sonata or something that Slash was using to warm up. And then Axl just started singing over it. And so you like look at the structures of the songs and like some, they're all so complicated. And, but you don't, it's the mark of good songwriting that you're not overwhelmed or bored by how weird it is because they make it so interesting. And there are several key changes. Sometimes the choruses are in different keys than the verses. Certain sections don't repeat in a traditional fashion. And so you have to be listening like really actively and you can't take your focus off of playing it for 1 second. Otherwise you'll fall off balance. And I like that challenge about Guns N' Roses because it's essentially one long solo that I've memorized for an entire show.
So you did embody the role of Slash eventually.
Yeah, it took many years and that's... and a lot of practice. And that's advice that I would give to any young guitar player or anyone starting out at anything new is just it just takes that much time and you have to just be patient and allow yourself to be messy and practice over and over again. And eventually you will get there, but it just takes a lot of patience. And that's something that I'm still learning today.
Well, I got something freaky for you. So you used to listen to Joni Mitchell, right?
Oh, I still do. Yeah.
Okay. So Slash's father was an artist who created all the albums for Joni Mitchell.
Wow.
So, yeah. You know, I think maybe it's no coincidence that you listened to Joni Mitchell and then played Slash guitar solo covers. I think the whole aesthetic you're just instinctively drawn to.
It's true. I read Slash's biography and his mom also like dated David Bowie. So like David Bowie was like Slash's stepdad figure for a second, which is crazy.
Well, I don't mean to ruin this for you, but in bizarre news this week, Donald Trump declared Guns N' Roses' November Rain as the greatest music video of all time. And here's the bizarre part. Here's the bizarre part. He made all of his staffers watch it with him in the Oval Office this week.
What?
Forced them. Probably sent out a memo like, hey, you guys need to be here at 1 p.m. We're going to watch November Rain.
Wow. What does he resonate with about that?
That you'll have to dig a little deeper on your own time I'm for sure. That. I had no idea.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
But you know what? You mentioned that you know, you're riding your bike in New York, and this is a terribly serious segue, but I did read that story on Instagram about that encounter that you had that mm-hmm. kind of left you shaking. Mm-hmm. And you know, you're witnessing this unexpected turn in human behavior. Do you think 2020 with Trump, racism, pandemic, it's made people nastier by nature?
It definitely, I think it just exposed a lot of prejudices and really deeply held biases that have been there for years and years and have, and just really came to the surface with Trump, you know. And my parents and I have a lot of family members that are conservative too. And it's unfortunate that it comes out in a lot of ways, in these nastiness and these like volatile conversations that are happening all over the country. But I've also noticed that throughout this time, and especially this summer with the pandemic and George Floyd's death and all of the social justice demonstrations in New York that are still going on, I have noticed for every bit of nastiness that I've been reading, there's an equal an opposite force of kindness and gentleness, and there's a compassion and there's a ferocity to maintaining justice. And in New York, it's been so inspiring to see regular protests happening. And like the way that it gets reported and warped in the news is that there's still like so much violence and looting, but there really isn't anything like that happening here right now. Like people are protesting peacefully. People are drawing on sidewalks with chalk, and people are volunteering. And there are vigils all over the city every day, and it's still very much in the conversation here, and it's not meant to antagonize. It's just an expression of pain and of trying to achieve justice. So I've been inspired to see people coming together, and it sucks that it takes tragedy to do that, but sometimes that's how it is.
I'm not sure Kamala as VP is the same as Hillary for president, but are you going to be as emotional this year as you were 4 years ago when you voted for a female?
I will take it. I will take the first black female vice president if that's what we have. And sure, yeah, I will feel some things when that happens.
We're going to do that. In fact, so like I said, I'm in Texas, and my wife and I, not only did Beto lose, but we were wearing Beto shirts to the voting building. Mm-hmm. And apparently all the old white Ted Cruz loving people had a problem with it, and they threw us out, actually.
Oh my God. Wait, were you able to vote?
We weren't. We had to come back. You know, and my wife was about to get all, Rosa Parks on them. But then I found out that you're not allowed to wear political shirts to a voting session, so you don't sway people's minds. But really, I just think we were outnumbered by a bunch of Ted Cruz people, and they tried to boot us out. So
that's shameful. And then you have these like pockets of Democratic cities. I just think, yeah, it's really interesting. It's definitely going to be a battleground state this year. So I'm thinking about you guys.
It kind of bleeds into, you're doing this music video for What a Time to Be Alive, and you're spending like weeks doing stop motion. I mean, it's quite an undertaking. So even with quarantine and having time on your side, it still had to be like this lesson in patience.
Oh, 100%. That was one of the biggest, that was one of the biggest undertakings I took over the pandemic. And I'm so proud of how it turned out, and it was worth it. And there was a point where I think the pandemic has sort of reframed what making music means to me as well, because the lack of touring means that you have to do it for yourself, because you're not in front of an audience, and you have to keep staying creative, and you have to keep finding new ways to entertain yourself. And I think I was just trying to entertain myself making this stop motion video. And I do some animation as well, but I knew that I didn't want to spend time on the computer for this one. I wanted to make something with my hands, and I wanted to get really messy and smash a watermelon and smash some eggs and stuff. And it took over my living room for 2 weeks, and I was just living in this insane mess for such a long time. And I'm someone who's really neat and orderly. And so it's hard. It's a real challenge for me to make things messy for art. And I wanted to get out of my comfort zone and do that, because that encapsulates 2020 for me. It's just a mess. And the video has me pouring paint all over the place. And I'm like, I had to cut out like all these little googly eyes and like this death spiral, and it just, and I took all the trash from my garbage can and like spread it all over the table and like swirled it around. it was just disgusting. But to me, like, that's what 2020 felt like. It just felt like anything can happen, anything goes. We have no idea what's happening next. We're just sort of in this shit together, and it's beautiful and it's also terrible, and we all feel insane all the time. And hopefully something good will come from it, and hopefully it'll result in more creativity and compassion.
Is some of that change permanent? So when the pandemic lifts and we can tour again, like, is Kay the artist, you know, what you've been going through with this quarantine, do you think you're going to be able to snap back to the way it used to be? Or there's been some permanent changes on how I think, how I create, and how I perform?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'll be ready to jump back into touring whenever that happens. I think it's going to be glorious and ravenous in the best way. And people are going to be so, like, I think everyone's senses are going to be so heightened seeing live music again and live theater again after having been deprived of it for a year. And I just think about that constantly. Like, what is the first show that I'm going to see when all this is over? What's the first show that I'm going to play when all this is over? And I think the thing that is irrevocable from this time is that I'll never take it for granted. And who knows what other pandemics might arise in our lifetime. I don't want to think about it, but I'll always remember this time as a time when live music wasn't accessible, and I'm going to appreciate it so much more.
Yeah, I like to think about stuff like, you know, like when you open for Big Boy, and Big Boy, he's really responsive to artists outside of his genre. You know, he collaborates with Waves, Fanagram, mm-hmm. Hitsune Miko, Little Dragon. So I was like, oh yeah, man, maybe one day Kay and Outkast, maybe that's going to mm-hmm. happen because of things like touring, you know?
Yeah. That's such a deep cut. I'm just, again, so impressed at how much research you did.
Well, I appreciate that. So, I mean, now I want to turn it over to you, because you have the floor to plug anything else. You know, what should people be on the lookout for? You know, any goodies?
Yeah, I have an album coming out in the fall that I'll be releasing a lot of stuff for. I'm taking steps to make a new music video this week. And I'm just trying to entertain myself, as always, and trying to make sure that I'm excited about what I'm making and putting it out in the universe and expecting nothing. It's a challenge, but I find that my mental health and my creative health is best when I'm just in it to have fun and do it for myself. And I feel like the older I get, the more gratifying it is as well to tap into my own intuition, which I feel gets stronger with time, and make things that truly excite me and not really worry about what is trendy or what other people are doing or what other people think.
I love that. I think that's just going to translate into you making the best music of your career. I really think so.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Well, What a Time to Be Alive is out now. Howl is out now. I love that video. In fact, if you're like a sailor sailing the seven seas and you're out in the middle of nowhere and you come across a bird outfit and you're like, WTF, yeah. You know, you can please send it to Kay or put it up on eBay, or you can wear it.
Oh my God. I missed. I know. I'm so sad that got lost, but
maybe whoever finds it can recreate the video, you know, whatever you choose to do with it, but it's out there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Kay, I do want to thank you for your time. And, you know, I want to say, I hope this is the first interview since your birthday. So I hope it was a good one.
It is. I'm so grateful that you were so thorough and so thoughtful. It's really not common, and I appreciate your time and your interest so much.